Money Talk.
I can take money and I can make it into more money.
25 years on the air with advice on money matters. Here's your host, Bob Brinker.
Whether you're the president of the bank of mom and dad or you're just a bank account away from America, you're always welcome right here on America's Money Program. It's Money Talk. Thank you for joining us. We have our guest segment coming up. That'll be coming up very soon. Let's take a look at the week ahead. What will happen in the canyons of Wall Street? Well, won't be a whole lot happening early in the week, but we will get some data later in the week that will draw some attention. The jobless claims update on Thursday. Estimate is 241,000 new claims. This is the third consecutive year of extremely low jobless claims. They're expected to stay low in Thursday's report. We'll also get the producer price index, used to be known as the wholesale price index. That'll come out Thursday. Expected to be very, very low in the 0.1%. 0.2% range, and that means the year-over-year figure will remain right around 2% or less for both of those categories. On Friday, we'll get the Consumer Price Index Friday morning. Looks like those numbers will be benign. The headline number looks like 0.2%. The core number the same. If it comes in that way, the year-over-year CPI will be 1.7%, and the year-over-year core would be 1.8%. Fact of the matter is that the Federal Reserve has been pursuing policies trying to get the inflation rate up to 2% using the gauge they like, the personal consumption expenditure gauge. That has even been lower than the consumer price index gauge. So, at least at this point, they're still working to try to get the inflation rate up to 2%. Now, the good thing about 2% inflation is that it's 2% away from deflation, which is the last thing you want to see is deflation. The problem with 2% inflation is the value of your dollar is cut in half in 36 years under the rule of 72. 72 divided by 2 equals 36. So that's the downside. But on the other hand, they really, really, they being the Fed, they want to stay as far away as they can stay from this whole issue of deflation because they view deflation as one of the worst things that can happen, and a lot of economists would agree with that. We return with our guest segment. Stay with us. It's Money Talk.
Money Talk.
Hi, I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans. Every day people ask me, can I still take advantage of today's low rates? Is it still a good time to refinance? The answer is yes. Now's a great time to call Quicken Loans at 800-QUICKEN. The rate today on a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is 3.99%, APR 4.19%. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to quickenloans.com. That's 800-QUICKEN.
Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
This is a court-ordered notice. Current and former BMW, Mazda, Subaru, and Toyota owners or lessees can receive payments and other benefits from a legal settlement related to allegedly defective Takata airbags in their vehicles. To see if your vehicle is included and to file a claim, go to AutoAirbagSettlement.com or call 1-888-735-5596. That's AutoAirbagSettlement.com or 1-888-735-5596.
Hey guys, Ken here from the hit podcast, Today's Growth. We all know increasing revenue's tough, but did you know that 100% of main sources of income fail? The odds are 100% that your current main source of income will someday no longer exist. 439 of 1955's original Fortune 500 are no longer around, yet their industries and even their product lines still thrive. What happened to these companies? Simple. They didn't believe that 100% of main sources of income fail. They never added a second revenue model. For years, my friends at Income Store have helped both households and businesses build second, third, and even fourth revenue streams. When it comes to helping people create their next revenue model, both Forbes and Inc. recommend Income Store as a can't miss. Could your household or business use an additional revenue model that doesn't solely depend on you? If so, you need to check out IncomeStore.com. That's IncomeStore.com.
This is a court-ordered notice. Current and former BMW, Mazda, Subaru, and Toyota owners or lessees can receive payments and other benefits from a legal settlement related to allegedly defective Takata airbags in their vehicles. To see if your vehicle is included and to file a claim, go to AutoAirbagSettlement.com or call 1-888-735-5596. That's AutoAirbagSettlement.com or 1-888-735-5596.
Hi, I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans. Every day people ask me, can I still take advantage of today's low rates? Is it still a good time to refinance? The answer is yes. Now's a great time to call Quicken Loans at 800-QUICKEN. The rate today on a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is 3.99%, APR 4.19%. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to quickenloans.com. That's 800-QUICKEN.
Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org. Number 3030.
This is a court-ordered notice. Current and former BMW, Mazda, Subaru, and Toyota owners or lessees can receive payments and other benefits from a legal settlement related to allegedly defective Takata airbags in their vehicles. To see if your vehicle is included and to file a claim, go to AutoAirbagSettlement.com or call 1-888-735-5596. That's AutoAirbagSettlement.com or 1-888-735-5596.
Don't let termites ruin your home or bees keep you inside. Call Stanley Pest Control for a free inspection. 1-800-GOT-BUGS or visit them online at StanleyPest.com.
Stanley Pest Control. Call 1-800-GOT-BUGS.
Okay, here's the scoop.
It's Peter Tillman. The next Peter Tillman at 10. Is the president going to break his mortgage deduction promise? Uh-oh. And is Mr. Scaramucci heading to Hollywood to do a sitcom? We'll talk about all of that and more starting at 10 right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
This is Money Talk.
On your radio across America and worldwide on the web, it's Money Talk. Our toll-free line, 1-800-934-2221. We'll take your calls for our guest author later in the broadcast. Let's move to our segment now with author Brian Merchant and his new book, The One Device, The Secret History of the iPhone. Brian, this looks like the work on the topic of the iPhone. Congratulations on this book. I have a copy in my hand. Tell us why you wrote it.
Well, hi, Bob. Thanks for having me. And, I wrote it because I felt like there hadn't really been sort of an in-depth, sort of definitive, comprehensive work exploring the origins and history of the most profitable consumer product of our era, the most popular mobile computer of all time. So I decided to sort of really get down to the deepest level I could. I tried to get down to the really fundamental sort of ground level and build it on up from the raw materials that it's made from sort of the abstract ideas that influenced it and sort of the story inside Apple, the creators who really sort of wound this amazing product together, you know, starting 15 years ago.
Yeah, and you did a fantastic job. Have you had any reaction from anybody at the company that makes this product?
Yeah, you know, I've had a lot of the folks that I spoke to. I spoke to a lot of former Apple employees who worked on the iPhone project. There's actually not a whole lot of iPhone engineers and software engineers who worked on the very first sort of prototype iPhone, who brought it to fruition and then actually saw that first one released in 2007. Not a whole lot of those guys are still left at the company. Some are, and I do have a lot of sources at Apple that I was able to speak with anonymously. So I've had a lot of folks reaching out, designers, engineers, people who are kind of in the trenches saying, you know, thanks for shining a light on all this other stuff besides the, you know, well, a lot of people are familiar with the Steve Jobs narrative and the story about how he presents it, you know, on that famous keynote to the world. And we have that part of the story. But I think a lot of the employees at Apple were really grateful that I sort of expanded the view a little bit. And we heard from, you know, in the book, we heard from a lot of folks who did things like design the user interface or shrink the computer down to a size where we could really have basically a full-on mobile computer that could fit in our pockets. That was something that really wasn't being done at the time in a meaningful way. So there's a lot of really sort of great, unprecedented innovation going on in the very first iPhone, and we hadn't really heard those stories. So, yeah, the reception inside Apple has been really positive.
Our guest is Brian Merchant. He's the author of the brand new book, The One Device, The Secret History of the iPhone. Now, of course, Brian, you mentioned Steve Jobs, and Steve is certainly identified with this product, this revolutionary product that in a lot of ways I think has changed the world. Let me ask you, because I can't think of anybody right now on the planet that's better qualified to answer this question than Brian Merchant. How much credit, how much actual, because we know that there was he was putting things together. He wasn't inventing things for the first time in many cases with the iPhone. He was putting the whole concept together. And so how much credit would you give Steve Jobs for the iPhone, and in what particular areas is that credit assigned?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think the answer is he deserves a lot of credit. It's not that he deserves less credit than he currently gets, maybe a fraction less or something. It's that everybody else that worked on it deserves more credit. So as you were just hinting at, he was really a fierce advocate for this project once he was convinced to do it. So he had to be sort of his arm had to be twisted at numerous junctures in the project's development. He wasn't sold on sort of the basic input technology, which is the finger-based multi-touch. He didn't really think the first time he saw that was the way to go. So his design team and his engineers and Johnny Ive, in this case, had to say, listen, just use it, check it out. And he had to kind of come around on it later on when they were sort of facing the prospect of doing a phone. And again, this wasn't something that naturally sort of he wanted to do in his sort of heart of hearts. He wanted to, you know, make computers, and the iPod was a success. But, you know, all of a sudden in about 2003, 2004, the iPod is a big hit. And what do you know? Computers are getting smaller. They're getting faster. And cell phones, which are these kind of clunky utilitarian products that are gaining in ubiquity, all of a sudden have the capacity to hold MP3s, and they're a threat to the iPod. So that was kind of the impetus for the iPhone beginning to be taken up inside Apple. It wasn't that they really were dying to do a phone necessarily. It was that, hey, if we don't act, you know, the cell phone market's going to encroach on iPod sales. So even then, he really had to be convinced by his executive staff, by people inside Apple who were his sort of close advisors. He really had to be convinced to take up the phone as a project. Now, once he did, he made a lot of sort of historically forward-looking and great design calls. He was responsible for curating the aesthetic feel, the function of the product. He was right on a lot of things, but we don't really tend to think of the process as being as collaborative as it was. It was this intensely collaborative process where people who not only invented a lot of the key features, all the way down from this junior engineer named Josh Strickon, who invented a way to do, actually using Stony research to sort of as the basis for his leap in multi-touch technology, and able to do that on a clear glass surface like we're so familiar with now on the iPhone, to the user interface design. Guys like Imran Chowdhury and Bas Ording really designed the whole paradigm by which, you know, we touch, poke, prod, swipe, and navigate information on a screen. So all those design components, the engineering components, were all done from, you know, different corners of Apple, and they're the ones who kind of tend to get left out of the story.
And one of the things that people will learn by reading your new book, The One Device, and we're speaking with author Brian Merchant, is that in real terms, this can be traced back to around 1993 with a device known then to very few as the Simon Personal Communicator.
Right. I love this story. You know, so Steve Jobs is one of the towering figures in not just the American tech industry, but sort of technology history in general. And yet the iPhone, if we're talking about the iPhone, and I'm saying on a basic level, this is what the iPhone does. You know, it's a black rectangle. It has apps, a touch screen. You can go on the web. You can write email. It takes calls. It even has this app store. Well, I could just as easily be describing the Simon, the IBM Simon, which you just mentioned, which was invented by this guy named Frank Canova, who doesn't even have a Wikipedia page. And yet he sort of engendered the sort of blueprint of the smartphone back in the early 90s, years and years, a decade and a half before the first iPhone hit the shelves. The problem is the technologies just weren't up to speed. The you know, internet wasn't fast enough to do anything meaningful on the go. There wasn't Wi-Fi. There wasn't, you know, there wasn't so many different things. There wasn't multi-touch. There wasn't, you name it. You know, it had all these ideas, all these germs of a really great product, but they just weren't to the point where they could be usefully cultivated in a meaningful way. So it sputtered out. I think it sold 50,000 copies in its entire lifetime, and 1 year later, IBM shut it down because it just wasn't making any money. It just, you know, we had to wait until all those technologies reached that convergence point where they were all mature enough to be wound together into something that was sleek, that was intuitive to use, that actually functioned seamlessly. And that's where the Apple crew deserves a ton of credit for figuring out the exact right way to blend all those ingredients together.
Can you pinpoint, we're speaking with Brian Merchant, the author of The One Device, The Secret History of the iPhone, piece of work here. How long did it take you to write this one, Brian?
Yeah, I've been pecking away at it for over, I'd say 2 years. It was a very intensive 2 years. You know, I traveled around the world to research and to report this, to try to follow some of the different technologies, some of the different, raw material flows. So I really tried to figure out every ingredient that made the iPhone, and where it came from and what it means today. So I did everything from go to a mine where Apple sources its tin in Bolivia to kind of see that part of the chain. And I went to China to where the devices are famously manufactured en masse, to see sort of what it means to put these things together. So it was a very intensive 2 year process. That combined with all of the interviews that I gathered with all of the designers, inventors, engineers, and folks who worked inside and out of Apple to make this thing possible.
Brian, was there an inflection point that you can identify where the people at the top of Apple realized that they had a monster?
That they had a hit. That's an interesting question, too, because...
Well, not just a hit. Not just a hit. I mean a monster.
Right, you're right. A monster, yeah. So it wasn't until well after it launched, honestly. I mean, it's easy to sort of forget that when the iPhone first launched, number one, there was no app store. What you bought was what you got. And that was, you know, it had a great web browser. It had a number of nice features, but it had a very limited number of apps, about a dozen, and that's it. It was a closed ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And it worked as a phone pretty well, and it worked as kind of a novelty fun web browser, and then it had Google Maps, which I think was sort of the breakthrough. That was the one that people went, oh, okay, this is something a little bit different. So people were using Google Maps, and if you think back about 10 years ago or so, like, that's the feature that your friend who was the early adopter who got the first iPhone was going, okay, well, yeah, let's just find the nearest Starbucks or whatever. It wasn't until, again, this is another thing that Steve Jobs had to be convinced to do. He did not want to do an app store at all. He felt that opening it up to the developers would introduce some risk and some vulnerability into the sort of very controlled system that they had built, that that he felt was very immaculately designed, and he didn't want anyone sort of tampering with that. He was afraid that if they had an app that was made by some developer that dropped calls, that interfered with somebody calling 911, that it would just be a catastrophe. So he really had to be convinced, again, to do an app store. And at 2008, shortly after they did finally, you know, offer this app store, a full year after the iPhone had been out, to really actually less than projected sales. It was selling very, very low. And a lot of my sources told me that they saw Apple's financial data, and it was just a blip. It wasn't doing anything until that app store kind of opened the floodgates, and they started making headlines. There was all kinds of funky apps out there. People were, one of the very first ones was a fart machine that this guy went on, you know, it was called iFart. And it's a footnote in history now, but it was one of these weird demonstration cases where it's like, oh, this phone can do anything, even as something as ridiculous as this. And it was after that started snowballing, and games came on, and all sorts of...
Yeah, that app in particular strikes me as a commentary on American culture.
Right. Yeah, we want to go right for the toilet as soon as possible. The toilet humor, I guess, it's pretty funny. But it's true. It was a Wild West kind of at that point. You know, you could make, this guy made $1 million just with making a simple. It was really easy to design. I interviewed him for the book because he was one of the first to make a lot of money off of an app. And he said it, you know, it was like, oh, they decided on the idea in a weekend and developed it in a week or two. And the money just started coming in.
Yeah, I missed that app. Our author is Brian Merchant, and his new book, The One Device, The Secret History of the iPhone. We're going to take your calls for Brian as we continue our discussion at 1-800-934-2221. Wherever you're listening from, the Sandwich Islands to Kennebunkport, from Fairbanks to Fort Myers, that number works. 1-800-934-2221. When we return, Brian, I want to ask you about something that's happened as a result of smartphones, and certainly the iPhone is a big part of that, and that is addictive behavior. We see it every day. We see people who stop driving their cars because they're addicted to their iPhone screen. We'll talk about it and lots more when we return.
This is Money Talk.
Allergy sufferers are hearing a lot of numbers these days about symptoms and relief. But the number sufferers want most is zero, as in zero nasal allergy symptoms. And nothing gets you closer to zero than Nasacort. Because unlike antihistamines that stop only one cause of your allergy symptoms, Nasacort stops more. And stopping more gets you closer to zero. For 24-hour relief of your worst nasal allergy symptoms, including congestion, choose Nasacort. It stops more of what makes you miserable. Use as directed.
This is a court-ordered notice. Current and former BMW, Mazda, Subaru, and Toyota owners or lessees can receive payments and other benefits from a legal settlement related to allegedly defective Takata airbags in their vehicles. To see if your vehicle is included and to file a claim, go to AutoAirbagSettlement.com or call 1-888-735-5596. That's AutoAirbagSettlement.com or 1-888-735-5596.
Boost our medicated ointment works fast to relieve the pain and itch of almost any skin irritation.
It's amazing. It's like as soon as you put it on, you can feel it working.
We've had Blue Star in the family for years. It works on everything.
I love the cooling sensation on my athlete's foot.
What a relief for my eczema.
Nothing worked on my dry, cracked skin until I tried Blue Star.
Blue Star is great for scalp itch.
Look for the white box with the Blue Star in the first aid section. Feel Blue Star work fast or your money back.
Summer has a certain hue, the kind of vibrancy you can feel and almost hear. And Sam Adams Summer Ale, with three new colors with one great taste, captures the colors of summer perfectly. There's the yellow of the rising day, the orange of a heat-ripened afternoon, and the blue of long, cool nights. These are the colors of summer in one perfect summer ale. Sam Adams, Boston Beer Company, Boston, Mass. Savor the flavor responsibly.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill pharmacy. Pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a pill. Call 1-800-530-4721 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 1-800-530-4721 to take your call now. Call 1-800-530-4721. That's 1-800-530-4721. Again, 1-800-530-4721.
Attention car owners, you know, many of you tell me it's hard to find the time to sell your car, so you just take the trade-in value without checking out your other options like CarStub.com. CarStub.com is the new marketplace to sell a car, truck, van, or SUV hassle-free. CarStub.com's convenient service will send a friendly appraiser to your home or office and give you a free, no-obligation offer. You get more than a dealer trade-in price without the hassles of private party sales. CarStub.com makes selling a used vehicle easy, and they do all of the DMV paperwork. And if you need to upgrade to a new car, CarStub.com can help you with that, too. My friend Derek Emery, he's the owner. He's known as Sledgehammer Derek because he will buy any car, even if it's got dents in it. How much cash are you driving? Find out. Call 800-870-1841. That's 800-870-1841. Or submit your car for free at carstub.com. Busy lives need convenience, so that's why you have to visit carstub.com today. When you change your car, you change your luck, and you change your luck at carstub.com. Check them out. Do it today.
Hi, I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans. Every day people ask me, can I still take advantage of today's low rates? Is it still a good time to refinance? The answer is yes. Now's a great time to call Quicken Loans at 800-QUICKEN. The rate today on a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is 3.99%, APR 4.19%. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to quickenloans.com. That's 800-QUICKEN.
Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org. Number 3030.
This is a court-ordered notice. Current and former BMW, Mazda, Subaru, and Toyota owners or lessees can receive payments and other benefits from a legal settlement related to allegedly defective Takata airbags in their vehicles. To see if your vehicle is included and to file a claim, go to AutoAirbagSettlement.com or call 1-888-735-5596. That's AutoAirbagSettlement.com or 1-888-735-5596.
Okay, here's the scoop.
It's Peter Tillman. The next Peter Tillman at 10. Is the president going to break his mortgage deduction promise? Uh-oh. And is Mr. Scaramucci heading to Hollywood to do a sitcom? We'll talk about all of that and more starting at 10 right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
This is Money Talk.
We are back in America's Money Program at 1-800-934-2221. If you'd like to call and talk with our guest author, Brian Merchant, his new book, The One Device, The Secret History of the iPhone. We see a lot of addictive behavior with smartphones and certainly with iPhones. You know, it's funny, Brian, they talk about driverless cars coming in the future. I see many driverless cars every day. For example, stopped at a red light and the light turns green and the car has no driver. The car does not move because they're addicted to their iPhone. What's going on here?
Yeah, you know, that's funny you say that. One of the engineers that I spoke with, who I interviewed for the book, told me that that potentiality was there very, very early on. In fact, he was basically user testing the prototype of the very first iPhone. And one of the things that he was doing was testing it in his car. And in hindsight, he's appalled by his behavior, but he was seeing if he could drive with one hand and text with the other because he figured people would be doing this. And looking back now, he's kind of aghast at the fact that he has, in fact, helped sort of unleash this sort of behavior. And I made it a point to ask all the folks that I interviewed this question exactly, like how they felt about this creation of theirs that's become so ubiquitous. And almost every single one of them would point to exactly what you're talking about. They were a lot more sort of ambivalent than I thought. A lot of them said, you know, it's great. It does this and this. It's crazy to be a part of the team that made the most successful product in recent memory. But I go out to eat dinner, and then my wife will say, hey, look over there. That couple, they've just been staring at their phones all night. They haven't said a word, basically. Look at that family of four that's just sitting, you know, the pizza's getting cold, and they're all staring at their phones. Like, you mm-hmm. did this. And they say, well, you know what? We kind of did. And so there is this kind of ambivalence among a lot of them about that sort of side of the iPhone. And it's a very real and very powerful change that it's ushered into society.
Well, you know, I read the stories of those who have been killed with their smartphones crossing streets, not paying attention to anything but the screen, and getting run over, and those stories are more and more common. And they didn't really strike home to me until I was on a campus recently and I saw a young female student walking along and fall into a ditch. She was not seriously injured, but she was glued to her iPhone, of course. And it just seems to me like it's only getting worse.
Yeah. I mean, there's that famous video that I think was caught on the mall surveillance footage of the woman who walks right into the fountain without even seeing it coming. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is a brand new phenomenon that we're going to have to decide collectively how we deal with it, because it is consuming more and more facets of our lives. The Atlantic just did a big story about how it's changed behavior in teens who are going out less and driving less, going to the mall less, because they have their phones and they are more comfortable staying home. I don't know how much credence to necessarily lend any big sort of generation-spanning proclamations yet, but it's pretty undeniable that something has changed. And we are, I think, as a society, as a people, going to have to, you know, figure out what tools we want to use to combat that tide, or if there's a way to design impediments to mass distraction into the device itself. I think it's a really interesting area that we're going to see get more attention in the near future.
Well, Brian, just think how difficult it is, and so many parents would attest to this, how difficult it is today for a parent to compete with something like an iPhone with their teenage child that has it all the time. I mean, it seems like they're on them all the time.
Yeah. I mean, I have trouble, you know, competing for attention with it with, you know, my own family, with my wife. We both do it, you know. We'll catch each other doing the exact behavior that I was just describing, where we'll be sitting on the couch at the end of the day, and we'll be staring at our phones, and your conversation can kind of, you know, stunt and zag. And I have a little 1.5-year-old, and we're trying to just keep the phones away from him as long as possible, just to try to keep that behavior, like, out of his, even his, like, general zone, his periphery. We don't even want it anywhere. We don't want him to be born into this world where everybody is glancing at their screen every 5 seconds, be it as it may, the reality, you know?
I often wonder with the teeny boppers who seem to basically be 24/7 with these things, what they think has happened in the last 60 seconds that they have to pick that doggone thing up and check it again.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a lot of different inputs to that sort of phenomenon. And I think, you know, Facebook and Instagram and social networks that really reward immediate responses with likes. And, you know, every time that you get a little like or an upvote, you get a little, you know, social scientists have found that you actually get a little adrenaline rush. You get a little shot of dopamine when you get a retweet or somebody likes your post. It's an actual, you really get a, it is actually addictive on a physical level. And
that, at so that point, it reaches at that point, it reaches the level of the bizarre, as far as I'm concerned. I hate to move to a down subject, but we must. You write in your book about the Foxconn suicide factory. You've actually been there. You're one of the few people from the West who have actually been in the Foxconn suicide factory. Tell us about that.
Yeah. Well, some of your listeners may recall in 2010 or so when this suicide epidemic made headlines at Foxconn, which is the largest manufacturer of electronics worldwide, and Apple in particular. It's the company that Apple turns to assemble most of its devices. And in 2010, at the most famous, the biggest iPhone factory, working conditions were such that over 14 people in the space of 1 year committed suicide by jumping off of the dormitory buildings or other large, buildings. So it.
Well, I'll tell you what, Brian. If that isn't the ultimate statement of I hate my job, I don't know what
right.
would be.
Yeah, absolutely. And it really was. It was a protest. So a lot of these workers are coming from impoverished areas from across the country where they, are expecting to find this job. They're alone. They're isolated in this new city. And then they have this grueling work schedule where they're on their feet for, 10 to 12 hours a day. It's really crazy, the hours that these folks put in. They're kind of expected to do overtime. And if they want to actually make any meaningful amount of money to send back home, they have to do overtime. So, and they're doing this one task over and over, whether it's just soldering in a tiny little component on the circuit board and then next, whether they're wiping the screen once or twice and then next, whether they're, polishing. It's just over and over. Mm-hmm. And then if they screw up, the line boss, the manager can come and wait until after the shift is done, and they'll have people who screwed up stand up, and then they'll publicly berate them. It's just in the work culture there, especially at Foxconn, to sort of indulge in these public humiliations. It's really pretty brutal. So I wanted to see if those conditions, which had led to this sort of psychological despair that led to suicides and other severe forms of worker alienation and depression, were still persisting today. So I visited the same plant, Longhua, where it does still manufacture some iPhones, not quite as many as it used to. And I interviewed workers, and as you said, I managed to slip inside the factory walls, which had no journalist, to my knowledge, has been allowed in unsupervised. So we caught a lucky break and snuck in. And you're really just struck by the sheer size of this thing. I mean, it's a city. It's maybe bigger than most cities. It's 450,000 people, 500,000 people live, work, eat, sleep, and, do live there. This is their entire existence, is in the walls of this factory. And you're tiny inside of it. It took us about an hour and a half to walk across the entire thing. And it's maybe just as psychologically difficult as it was back then. Pays a little better. Apple did, come around and say, okay, you guys need to provide counselors. You need to make sure people are getting paid their benefits. But the fact remains that this sort of very brutal psychological burden that is still present there, that a lot of the workers just say, you get used to there being this ghost of death. We heard about this ghost of death at Foxconn, that it's this normal thing that you just kind of get used to. You work there for a year, and then you try to get a better job. Like, it's become such a normal thing.
As we look ahead to, we've just gone by the 10th anniversary of the iPhone, of course. As we look ahead to the iPhone 8 down the road later this year, are there any thoughts you have of what we might be looking at?
Yeah, it's always a fun game to play. That's speculate the design and feature improvements on the next iPhone, and it's played by hundreds and hundreds of writers and analysts and industry watchers every year. So this year, the smart money says that there's going to be an iPhone sort of special edition that's going to cost upwards of $1,000. And it will have a special OLED screen that kind of fills the entire surface, bends right across the sides. There's going to be no home button on this. It's going to be right on the screen. It's going to be, it's thought to be, again, all of this is speculation based on leaks and, you know, insider reports and stuff, but it's thought to contain augmented reality compatibility. So people are going to be doing stuff like, you know, having overlays on the screen that can interact with, you know, what the phone is seeing. You can interact with the actual environment through the lens of your screen in interesting ways. Pokemon Go. Think Pokemon Go, but with many, many more applications. So it's going to be, you know, they hope, I think it's going to be a bold step into the future of the smartphone. Whether or not it's just a fancier version of the device that you already have in your hands sort of remains to be seen.
Apple has been able to maintain pricing over a long period of time on an item that some people thought at some point would be a commodity. Is there a commodity risk to the app, to the iPhone, in your view?
I mean, yeah, I think so. But again, like, you're right. They have maintained these high margins for much longer than a lot of people thought they'd be able to. And it certainly seems to me that the sort of homogeneity of the smartphone now, as its competitors have caught up, you know, as we see phones from Samsung and LG and even Google now is making their own phone, and they look and feel a lot like the iPhone. So yeah, I do sort of think that we are getting to this point where commodification is more and more inevitable. Apple has done a lot of interesting things in an effort to sort of combat that. And that is to sort of fiercely maintain quality standards. And they've only once ever released a phone that was for a cheaper market, and they kind of quickly swept that under the rug. So they have maintained these quality standards, these profit margins, this design standard that is, you know, that you get an iPhone, you know it's going to have iOS software, which is some of the best in the game. It has the best security in the game. It has the features are, if not the best, always up there in the top tier. So they have sort of cornered the market on the premium smartphone for now. We may see that come under threat soon, and that may be why they're doing this more luxury-oriented smartphone. But, I do think that, yeah, it's the commodification is going to happen eventually.
Brian Merchant, our guest, his new book, The One Device, The Secret History of the iPhone. It was interesting in reading your book, Brian, to read the portion about sketch that was put together by the cartoonist in the late 1800s. It did a pretty good job of projecting the iPhone.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. There was a period where right after the telephone began reaching ubiquity, where futurists and satirists and people who make a sport of thinking about the future started dreaming up ways to add a visual element to that. So from a very early point on, you kind of have these visions of a device that, as Nikola Tesla said, would fit in your vest pocket. It would connect you to a brain that, you know, would span the entire globe, and that you could send audiovisual messages over it. And you have this germ, this seed, again, this very basic conception of what the smartphone actually is, laid out 100 years before it was even a glint in Apple's eye. And then, this links back up to some of the addiction stuff we were talking about earlier. There was a satirist who wrote this great cartoon for Punch magazine, I think in 1906, and it shows a couple with these funky little devices, and he's watching, I think, horse racing, and she's reading an amatory message or reading a romance novel or something, and they're not looking at each other. They're at a picnic in the park and have these devices in their hands. And it's 101 years before the very first iPhone. So we kind
that
of
is amazing.
If we look, right, isn't it? Isn't it?
A true visionary right there, for sure. Our guest, Brian Merchant, his new book, The One Device, The Secret History of the iPhone. Brian, we congratulate you on this fine piece of work, and we thank you for making time to share with us today. We wish you continued success.
Thanks so much. I had a blast.
This is Money Talk.
Money Talk.
At the United States Postal Service, we don't just carry your product to its destination. We deliver your business, representing you and all of your hard work with pride. It's almost as if you're the one showing up to the customer's door, greeting them with a smile. Because when you ship with the United States Postal Service, your business becomes our business. That's why we deliver more e-commerce packages to homes than anyone else in the country. The United States Postal Service. Priority, you.
Hi, I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans. Every day people ask me, can I still take advantage of today's low rates? Is it still a good time to refinance? The answer is yes. Now's a great time to call Quicken Loans at 800-QUICKEN. The rate today on a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is 3.99%, APR 4.19%. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to quickenloans.com. That's 800-QUICKEN.
Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030.
Jose, I still can't figure out why you want to be one of them smell-good plumbers.
Honestly, Uncle Bubba, the better question is, why wouldn't I? They drive new, fully stocked trucks with everything and a toilet, too. They wear fresh, clean, company-supplied uniforms. They have a price book with every job to eliminate guesswork. They don't have to drive far from home to get to the nearest service center. They work for a family-owned business with a family-oriented culture. They know everyone on their team is background-checked and drug-tested, and they get to help people buy unstopping drinks for $99.
Gee, maybe I'll put in an application, too.
I don't think that's a good fit, Uncle Bubba, but they are looking to add to their smell-good team. So, if anyone of you listening wants to apply like I did, please do.
This is Mike Diamond, and I guarantee my plumber will show up on time and smell good, or your house call is free.
Become a smell good plumber today. Apply online or call 1-800-446-MIKE for more information. Contractor license number 399-178.
Do you know people who eat what they want and never gain weight? It's most likely because of their metabolism. Unless you are one of the fortunate ones that have such a metabolism, losing weight will be a problem. Rest assured, Proactive Health Labs has a solution and will get you on the proper diet to fire up your metabolism. They'll teach you what fruits and vegetables you should eat, as well as what vitamins and minerals to take. Don't lose hope. Proactive Health Labs is the place to start. Check them out at proactivehealthlabs.org. That's proactivehealthlabs.org.
Running low on the stuff you need? Time for a Target run. We're here for all the big moments and the little ones, too. Like epic after-school treats. Market Pantry snacks are all 10% off. Need easy crock-pot dinners? Grab Market Pantry frozen chicken. A 2.5-pound bag is just $4.99. For meals on the go, grab Up and Up sandwich bags. A box of 150 is always $3.84. Get savory savings plus everyday low prices on everyday essentials. Target run and done. Pricing may vary. Restrictions may apply.
Attention all authors. Page Publishing is looking for authors. Have you written a book and want to get it published? Page Publishing will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, Apple iTunes, and other outlets. They handle all aspects of the publishing process for you. Printing, cover art, publicity, copyright, and editing. Call 800-501-3689 now for your free author submission kit. That's 800-501-3689 for your free author submission kit. Again, 800-501-3689.
I met someone. You hear it a lot from people on Match, because more people have met their someone on Match than any other dating app. Everyone wants to find that meaningful connection, and Match is not only number one in first, but second dates, too. Now here's a free offer for our listeners. Go to match.com/mix for 7 days free. That's 7 days completely free to search, view photos, and connect. This free offer is found at match.com/mix. That's match.com/mix. Match.com/mix.
This is Money Talk.
We are back on America's Money program, and we thank you for joining us. Fascinating talking to Brian Merchant and his book, The One Device. I mean, that is the go-to book on the topic of the smartphone and the iPhone. I mean, I tell you what, he sunk the battleship on that topic, and I think he will own that topic going forward. For information on my investment letter, that's Bob Brinker's Market Timer investment letter, visit BobBrinker.com and request a complimentary bank issue. Easily done. Just go to the website homepage at BobBrinker.com, click on the Request a Complimentary Bank Issue feature, and the August edition of the Market Timer investment letter has just been published this week. While you're at the website, you can check out Money Talk On Demand information. You can stream our broadcast to your computer, download to your smartphone as well. That is Money Talk On Demand. The investment talk is year-round. And with Money Talk On Demand, you listen wherever you go, whenever you like. On your schedule, sign up at BobBrinker.com, right there at the Money Talk On Demand logo. And many of our back broadcasts are completely archived at Money Talk On Demand, going back many, many weeks. And you're welcome to check that out also at BobBrinker.com. No question about it, the iPhone, the smartphones, they have changed the world. You know, Steve Jobs used to talk about changing the world. How would you like to change the world? Not an easy thing to do, but I think on that particular score, you could say the smartphone, the iPhone, certainly has been a device that has changed the world. Think of the impact it has had on people's time. Hey, before they beam me out of here, let me thank all of our Money Talk Trekkies for cruising with us on the Starship Money Talk. Program coordinator Ravi Chandran, producer Meredith Oakes, technical directors Angel Bordon and Mr. Bob Mack. Till next time, happy investing, and may the odds be ever in your favor.